hear a Love song
talk
and then
radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. Here once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2910. That's 2910, 2910. Tonight we're going to have a really, really good guest on. And I see that we just lost her just a second. I don't know what happened. But anyway, I hope she calls right back in. Her name is Dr. Kat Smith from Dallas, Texas, and she's a survivor, an author, a speaker who describes herself as a resilient survivor and an authentic creative inspirer. Okay. And she goes on and on. I'm not going to read her whole bio. Right now what I'll do is I will read her mission statement. And if she doesn't come on, then that's okay. What we'll do is maybe she got dropped. I don't know what happened here. But it doesn't matter. We'll go on with the show anyway. Okay, this is our mission statement. We have a single list of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two different ways, okay. Number one is educating the public. She's back. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo. I see her hand up here. She's saying, help, help. Hold on a second here. I'll get it back on. Okay. Present the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And number two is offering hope for healing to numerous peers and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Our guest tonight is a very special guest. She has her own radio show, and she was on ABC Radio Networks, Inc. Okay, that's a syndicated morning radio show. And she certainly knows a lot about the radio. And also, she is a doctor. She is a Dr. Kat Smith, and she's from Dallas, Texas. Now, anyone who's listening, I suggest you listen well because she's here. And you can, you know, call in, be a part of the show if you want. Just simply call the telephone number. I'll see your number, and I'll open up your mic, okay? The telephone number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. All right. Now, let me see if she can hear me. Dr. Kat, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, that's great. Okay. What we do here at NASCA, I probably sent you an email and described it, but I will describe it because there are people, you know, that haven't heard our show before. And they don't understand, you know, how it exactly works. So what we do is we have our guests come on. Most of them, you know, 95% of them are survivors themselves, okay? And so they give us some background, and we go from there, all right? And then after the person, whoever our guest may be, tells their story, then what they do is we talk about what you're doing today. And that gives people hope, Kat, okay? That's something that they very much need, especially now. I don't think I have to tell you that all the stats are tenfold. I'll put it that way. of abuse, you know, the so many people are going through depression and all kinds of stuff. A lot of people are going backwards in their healing journey, as we call it here on NASCA. And it's a hard time for a lot of people. So we have someone on who has quite a story to tell and who also is today, you know, doing so well. It gives people a lot of hope. Can you hear me? She's off again. She's having trouble getting through here. All right, let me see what this other telephone number is here. She'll call back in again. Okay.
Hello?
97. Yeah, who's this? 972,
Hi,
area code?
This is Dr. Kat.
I
got cut off twice. Yeah, I got cut off twice, so I thought I'd call back.
Oh, boy, I don't know why that is. Ooh. All right, let's hope we can have a show, or we'll both be angry. I don't know. But anyway, I was saying such nice things about you. Yes, I was. But anyway, now we have this person on. This is Gez, this wonderful guest, who went, you know, through a lot of things. And, you know, all of us have terrible stories. Many of us were not unique, but they're similar many times. And so, you know, feel free to call in. Again, I'll give out the phone number because maybe you didn't even hear it. I don't know what's going on. I hope it's not a Blog Talk issue. It's 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And you can be a part of this show by being on the panel, okay? And you can ask questions. Sometimes people have questions or they identify with some of the things that you're talking about. And sometimes they just want to say hi, okay? So
yeah.
Why don't you start out? Yeah. Start out by telling your story. I'm not going to go into your bio right now. I may ask you to stop a couple times, you know, throughout the show.
Okay.
This is what we do. I might have a question. Or, well, you know how it works because you know radio. You know it well. So, okay. Yes, you do. I don't have to tell you. No, I don't. So go ahead and start telling your story. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm a survivor of both childhood molestation and date rape. And I've also done a TED Talk about my experiences. My mother remarried and moved us to Texas from New Orleans, and her husband was my abuser. He molested me from the age of 9 to 13, and my mother recently passed away 2 years ago now, and she was still with this man. And so my entire, tween years was trying to recover from this abuse because even though I told my mother what was going on, she never did anything to stop him from doing this. But not only was I abused by this man, one of my sisters actually had a child for him. And one sister, both my older sisters got married young so they could get away from the house. But it was just a very toxic situation to be in. And because I never got any assistance with what I was going through, I went on in life to really be confused about what love is, because the people who were closest to me who were supposed to show me examples of love and what love was were the ones that were hurting me. So I was very confused about what love was. And so I, you know, put myself in situations where I was, again, taken advantage of, and so thus the date rapes. And so I realized that the least common denominator was me, so I had to do something to protect myself and to recover from this and to also set boundaries so that it wouldn't happen to me again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what that's about. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, so what happened after that? I mean, let me ask you something. When you were going through all this as a child, you know, and the things that were happening to you, were you able to function, do you think, in a normal way? What did you do? I mean, I know what I've been through, right? And mm-hmm. I was far from normal, I'm sure. And like school was a hard thing. I was very angry and very scared also. And I felt like I had no parents because I really didn't for some time. So what I'm trying to get across to you is we talk a little bit about feelings, because this is what our listeners, you know, can identify with, is the feelings mm-hmm. that you go through, those scary, dark, lonely night feelings. And like with myself, watching the sun come up because a monster might come in, right? And then mm-hmm. I saw the doorknob yeah. turn. I knew I was going to get it. So,
yeah.
you know, we have our stories. So how did you do in school? Were you able to concentrate?
Yeah, school was not a problem for me. I know that I could have excelled even better if I did not have these experiences. But because everyone in my family act like it was no big deal, I actually became a caretaker for my younger brothers and sisters. Now, my mom did not set a good example for us in many ways. My mom had 12 children by 10 different men. So she had her own challenges with understanding what love was. And I don't know what her demons were as far as trying to find love, or if she, you know, just was running amok. My grandmother was a lot stricter than my mother, which I spent a lot of time with her. But my mom had her own challenges, and so the generational abuse that we experienced, as far as, you know, my grandmother was, she was abused in a way where she was raped in a field by a man, and still my great-grandmother did nothing to help her, just kind of, she was still told to make sure my aunt got to school and everything. My grandmother wasn't allowed to go to school, and she, but my aunt was, so her sister was, and still, you know, worked the fields and all of this stuff. And then when it comes to my mother, she was, there's a story that a guy tried to molest her as a child, but my grandfather caught him, and the man went to prison for it. So you would think that if my mother went through this experience, that she would be trying to protect her daughters, you know, in a way that she understood what could happen to them. But my mother had her own challenges. So as I was going through what I was going through, and especially when I told my mother, because he would wake me up in the middle of the night, you know, and the guilt comes in where, I mean, if he's touching you in places where, you know, you're not supposed to be touching you, but it feels good because you're in a deep sleep, and, you know, then, you know, he does these horrible things to you, then you're feeling guilty because, wait, it felt good, but then I knew it was wrong, and then you tell somebody and they do nothing. So it was kind of I was very confused. So I became a caretaker to protect my younger brothers and sisters, even to the point of physically fighting him. I, at the age of, I guess, 12 and a half, I started sleeping with a knife under my pillow, and I threatened that if he came and touched me again, he would get it. So then I, you know, when I started getting this confidence and strength within me, then I was able to, you know, become a caretaker for my younger brothers and sisters. And then, but I, you know, I used to read a lot because I really wanted to understand why I was feeling the way I was feeling. You know, there was this sadness and a feeling of isolation, and I wanted to really understand what I was going through. So I read a lot of books. One book that really helped me was Brain Sex, and it's about the difference between a male and female brain. And so I was reading these kind of books at an early age, trying to really understand things and how I was feeling. But I still was very confused about what love was, and I always felt that the only thing men wanted from me was sex. So I would, you know, feel like I was just a walking neon sign, you know, with what I had experienced. I just didn't think anybody wanted to know how intelligent I was or anything like that. They just looked at me and just, you know, they wanted to jump my bones. You know, that's really how I felt most of my young adult life.
That's very understandable, you know. And we do get confused because, let's go back for a second, what you're speaking about there is very common. And anyone that's listening right now who's experienced this, please understand that God made our body, and then we have feelings, we have sensations. And if you stimulate certain areas, whether you're sleeping or you're not sleeping, you're going to respond, usually, not all the time, but usually, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not your fault. You see, you're talking about guilt. And so often, you know, people do feel guilty because, like you said, it felt good and you're responsive to it. And then later on, you really hate yourself and turn into, say, you know, hate, you know not
yes.
even liking yourself
mm-hmm.
because you know that it's wrong. And still, on the other hand, you enjoyed it. And that's a very weird place to be because you know it's wrong and yet you enjoyed
yes.
it. And that in itself is confusing. That's right. That's exactly
yeah.
right.
And yeah, you enjoy the touching, but the actual penetration was very painful because I was a child. But mm-hmm. it also affected my relationship with my first husband. I got married, and every time we engaged in sex, I would cry because I just felt that it was wrong, even though I loved him and it's something I wanted to share with him. But then at the end of it, I would cry, and he, you know, it was horrible for him because he kept thinking that he was hurting me and he just couldn't understand. And so when I finally told him what happened, he just wanted to go and just confront my mom and her husband. But I was like, you know what, don't even waste your time. Because when I confronted him, he, you know, it wasn't an apology at all. He was like, well, if I would have known it would have caused you that kind of problem, I wouldn't have done it. And I'm like, oh, is that your apology? You know, it totally does. He just totally didn't get it. And so, you know, it does affect so many different areas of your life, and you have to, I had to reparent myself. I had to work on, you know, my own healing and understanding. I had to get back in touch with my womanhood, my femininity, my sexuality. You have to really work on yourself to kind of heal from all of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more with that. And, you know, it's just really very hard, especially if you don't get the help that you need, you know, when you're a kid and you're trying to struggle with all these emotional things that you're going through and then trying to be a caretaker also to your, you know, the younger siblings. A lot of times people will put themselves in front so that their siblings, you know, they won't get touched and all this other stuff. Sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't help. It's really a terrible thing. And, you know, when it's in the family, like I've been abused in the family and outside of the family. I won't tell on air right now how many times mm-hmm. I was sexually abused, but there was so many times. But somehow when it's in the family, I think it's worse because
yes,
these are the people that are supposed to, these are the people that are supposed to nurture you, guide you,
mm-hmm.
love you, teach you, you know, protect you. Hello, protect you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, from all the atrocities outside of the world to their best ability, and that they're not even coming to you, you know, to help you. In fact, that they become your abusers, that really, really hurts a child. It hurts your soul. I know.
Yes.
Incest is, it happened in my family with me, so I know. And then you mentioned, too, also that, you know, you had told someone, a parent or whatever, and or you were going to. And I remember telling my mother about my brother, and her only response to that was, oh, this happens in some families. And that was it.
Oh, wow.
Well, yes,
oh,
it does.
Wow.
Was not supposed to, okay?
Exactly.
So,
exactly. I mean,
yeah.
And then just, you know, a lot of people, because they can't process what you're telling them, they can't deal with it, they try to belittle it and make it seem like, oh, it's no big deal, you know, get over it, you know, it happened so long ago, and all these different statements they use to silence you. But that's not fair to you. You need to be able to express, well, tell someone this happened, confront your abuser, and also to say to people, no, it has affected my life, and I am trying to heal from this, so you can't make me feel like the victim again. You know, you can't treat me this way. You have to, you know, be able to say, no, I don't like the way this made me feel. I don't like what you did to me. This was wrong. And something needs to happen. Unfortunately, it started to try to happen with my great niece. So my niece, who is the daughter of my mom's husband, the sister that had the child, she actually brought her young baby to visit my mom, and my mom left the baby alone, female girl, with her husband and went to the grocery store. Well, the child was clean and dressed and, you know, everything. And then when she gets there and my mom is not there and he's giving the child a bath. So I'm like, what are you doing? You know, and I told her, don't ever leave those children alone with him. He is a predator. He is going to do whatever he can to abuse a child, especially a girl child, and you need to protect your girls. So he was a predator, but she did not, my statutes of limitation had passed, but hers had not, but she did not do anything. You know, she just protects her daughters, kept them away from him, but he passed away as well. After my mom passed away, he passed away. So they're both gone, but the damage is already done.
Well, yeah, definitely. That's what happens, you know. And then we have to deal with those feelings. We go through anger. We go through self-loathing. Maybe I could have done something. Maybe I did enjoy it. You know, all these things, you know, go through our mind. And those who are having so many issues, you know, their self-image is off, they have low self-esteem. I don't have to tell you this, but I'm telling other people who are listening, you know, that there's all these things that we, the survivors, who are trying to survive, for God's sake, do go through. And it's a hideous, that was one of my mother's favorite words, hideous. Ugh. But anyway, it was a hideous thing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, for children to go through that. I finally got help when I was around 30, I think. Yeah, I was around 30. And that was from the church. We had a huge prayer, you know, huge prayer group. They're in their 20. We had over 200 people there. Ridiculous. I never saw one that large. But they came from all different walks of life. So we had counselors, we have therapists and so forth there. They got me into that later on, but they helped me at that time to, first of all, love myself, realize it wasn't my fault, you know, and that these people have problems and they should be in jail, okay? And, you know, they shouldn't be out on the street because I don't know of any predators that you can rehabilitate. I just simply don't. And
I think they pretend until they get their next victim.
Well, you know, I remember when Oprah had her show, one of her last shows. She had, I speak about this once in a while, she had just men on the stage, you know, okay, that were predators, and they had done time and had gotten all kinds of, maybe you saw this show, had gotten all kinds of help, and she asked every single one of them. They ranged in ages, I'd say, from maybe 36 to 60, maybe even a little bit older than 60, like 62, 64, whatever. Not one of them could say they could be trusted by children, not one.
No.
After all kinds of therapy.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also that, you know, this person, they have a different idea in their head of what, well, first of all, it's a sexual desire that these men have for children. And it's, you know, it just is illness. It's a sickness. And I know, you know, back in history, you know, men used to just take a woman, just take, you know, whatever they wanted. And, but, you know, this is not that time and era. You know, we have a right to say our bodies are our bodies, and you can't do these things to me because you find pleasure in it.
Right.
You know, whether it's a power trip or whether it's a sexual deviance or, you know, perversion, whatever you want to label it as, you still have no right to touch someone even if they don't know that they can say, no, don't do that to me. Because most time a child is threatened anyway. But, you know, I just don't understand how society can still believe that, you know, if a man says he's sorry for, you know, like he beat his wife and he say, oh, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again, and he does it again. You know, and a lot of times abused women believe that they're going to change because they love them. And no, that's not love. How can you stay in that relationship when you know it's not love? Abuse is abuse.
I know. But so many of us do that. Okay.
Yes.
I remember with
because
my first husband, I did
to believe,
that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're programmed to believe that, you know, it's okay, you know. And women, we are notorious for thinking, oh, don't be mean. You know, this, oh, you know, they need help. I can help them. Or, you know, be kind. You know, don't say anything. You know, don't bring attention to yourself. And we do all this self-talk, you know, this internal dialogue we have with ourselves, and it doesn't get us out of the situation in a, you know, to a healthy understanding of what love is and how people are supposed to interact with us.
Right. Absolutely. It's something we have to learn along the way if we're ever going to learn it. I mean, it was so many times, look, I had a care package, okay? And in that care package, I had made a copy of my driver's license and all the important papers that I needed, okay? And also my children. I have two children. And if my husband, I'm speaking about my first husband now, if he was going to drink far too much that night and maybe even smoke a little pot or something, whatever, I knew that he was going to get nasty, okay? He was going to get nasty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was in trouble. Now, he didn't hit the kids, but he ignored them, totally ignored them. And they didn't have, you know, like a father. They had a mother. They knew how much I loved them. But that's not good enough, especially with a boy. I had a little girl listening to me. She's not little anymore, honey. She's little in stature, okay. But she's... you know, I have a daughter and I have a son, and a boy needs his father. Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you need that guidance that, you know, that you learn so much from the same gender in your family. You learn so much, you know, and if he's not showing how to love and care for a wife, what is the child learning? You know,
nothing.
It's like, you know, the interaction of a family and showing loving, caring, respectful engagement, you know, kids pick up that. And if they're not seeing it, they go out and they act out in different ways because, you know, they're hearing it from their friends, how their parents are so, or they could see it, you know, that their parents are so much different than their own, or, you know, their family situation is so different, and why don't I have that? And I mean, because for a long, long time, watching certain things on television, I would get so emotional because I wished I had the relationship with my mother that I would see some women have on television, or have the family kind of gatherings that, you know, they show on television. And we didn't have that because our family had so many broken pieces, and there was so much abuse. And, you know, one time the boys were fighting and broke my mom's nose, and it was so much drama and dysfunction in the family that, you know, I just had to, I would escape by reading. I would climb a tree, me and my cat, and I would read books up in the tree, you know, far away from everybody. And so, yeah, I was pretty much, you know, like a loner in my family, you know, as large as my family was.
Yeah, yeah. But look what you had to face, though, when they were smaller and you were being the protector, okay? That puts mm-hmm. kids in a very weird position, very weird position. I came from such dysfunction where I saw blood flying all the time and sometimes teeth, too, you know,
wow.
punching this and, uh-huh. oh, yeah. And I would be, at the age of four, my mother would be all bloodied up, and my father, as I knew him to be at that time, I found out through ancestry, he's not my daddy, and I'm glad he wasn't my daddy, all right? Didn't
mm-hmm.
help me at the time, though. But the point is, I would go at the age of four and mop her face off at times with a wet rag
mm-hmm.
because she'd be all bloodied up, okay?
Uh-oh.
So what does this teach, you know, children? Like you said, children, we grow up in very volatile homes many times, and then we don't know, you know, how to, you know, pick proper partners. You know, my partners that I chose to pick, and I was married twice, I stayed with my second husband much longer than I, you know, probably should have, but he wasn't nearly as bad to me, okay? And we did
mm-hmm.
have good times together, wonderful times together. And he did try to be a good stepfather at times to my children. So to me, he was like, you know, so much better. But now that I can look back, I can see so many things. But with my first husband, you know, their father, he was just so neglectful. And I could see my own father in him. Okay, whom I thought was
yes.
my bio father at the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we grow up in situations like that, I was 30 years old before I got help from this prayer group, and I'm very thankful. They looked at me one day and they said, "You're a mess," and I said, "Yes, I am," you know. And so they worked with me and. That's where I got myself. I came in touch with who I really am as a person. I wasn't protecting people anymore. I had to come to know who I was. I knew I had certain talents. But on the other hand, I still had a long journey ahead of me because what they do is these people are supposed to mold us and teach us and all these things that you expect. And I know I can relate to what you just said because I used to watch Leave It to Beaver with the kids, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And things,
yeah.
you know, programs like that. And Half Pint. What was the name of that show? I loved it so much. But, you know, there were so many shows that we would watch, and they'd seem like perfect families. And I
yeah.
think to myself, my God, why couldn't I have been a part of a family like that?
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, you said something about, you know, when you got your, you were 30 when you got your therapy. I don't remember the age I was when I first went into therapy, but it was a traumatic experience then because it was through a church as well. I had met some missionary girls and became Mormon for a short period of time. And while I was there, they had a program that I talked to one of the Relief Society sisters, which in the Mormon church, the women study in Relief Society and the men study in priesthood, whatever. And so one of the ladies that told them what had happened to me, and so they said, well, maybe you need to go to a therapist. And so they, you know, assigned me to a therapist. And so I started going to the one guy, and the entire first session, I could not even look at him. I was sitting there crying, and I couldn't utter a word for the entire hour. But he gave me the book, The Courage to Heal, and asked me to start going through that book, and that helped a lot. But as I was working with him, him and his family was moving away out of state, and so there's another guy took his place. And the first session with this guy, he actually asked me, well, what were you wearing? And I was like, I totally lost it. I must have called him every dirty name I could, that could come out of my mouth, and I told him that he needed to just give up his license. I said, nobody should be treated like that, and you're a, you know, a jackass for even asking me that. And I just, and I stormed out of the office, and I vowed to myself I'd never use therapy as a crutch. And when I started having my practice, I said, I am not going to be your crutch. If I'm not giving you the tools you need to heal and move forward in your life and go on to have healthy, loving, respectful relationships, I am not the therapist for you. So I would not allow people to use me as a crutch. I would, you know, I'd be there for them. If they need me, they can always come back. But I would say, no, we have got to work through this. We have got to. You got to be strong. You have to work yourself through this because you are so much deserving of a happy, loving, healthy relationship. So I didn't use it as a crutch for me, and I wouldn't allow my clients to use me as a crutch. Because it's hard work. Nobody is denying that it's not hard work to face your demons, because a lot of times we stuff it down so deep inside we want to forget about it, but it keeps rearing its ugly head. It's like garbage that you don't put out on a curb. It's like you just try to hide it in the garage somewhere, but the stench is still going to be there because, you know, you can't. It's got to go. It's got to come out. It's got to go. And you have to address those demons, those experiences, and look them in the face. My second attempt at therapy, or that should have been my third, but it was a female. And actually, she took me through some regressive therapy, and I met myself as a little girl. At that time, I was being abused. And I connected with her, and I saw her, and I walk through the house that my abuse happened in, and the walls were crying. I remember so vividly going to the wall and feeling the water on the walls, and it's like the room was crying. And that was a very powerful therapy session for me, because not only was I able to forgive myself, because another thing that I was dealing with is because I was looking back at myself as a little girl, and I would have some out of body experiences, and I felt guilty that I didn't help her. But it was almost as if I was my grandmother, and I didn't help her. You know, so it was just a very confusing way of how I was processing it all. But I did have some guilt that I did not help myself, but I wasn't able to help myself because it was happening to me. So after I was able to connect all of that, I was able to say, okay, yeah, all right, yeah, let's move forward from this because, that was me. And because I had disassociated myself for so long, and just coming back and connecting with her was very powerful for me.
It's good you had someone that you could connect to. A lot of us, you know, a lot of people on NASCA, we don't have, you know, any family that we can look back on and say, well, this is one part of my family that, you know, I felt I could lean on or I could go to or who would, you know, be with me or support me or anything like that.
Yeah.
We have a lot of people like that. So when someone comes on, at least they have one person, you know, they can say, okay, there's one person that I know loved me or cared about me anyway, or whatever the case might be. And then, you know, that's so helpful. What you're speaking about is the child within, you know, the child within.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're so busy trying to be the adult instead of the child that we're supposed to be. We lose connection with the child within,
Mm-hmm.
And so then we have to come to learn to know that child and to make that child, you know, feel comfortable and to know that they're important. And, yes, you were crying, you were screaming, and, okay, I'm all right now, and it's okay to cry, it's okay to feel, it's okay, you know, to be because we smother our feelings down. So, you know, some people
yeah.
do dissociate, you know. Yeah, I have to tell
mm-hmm.
you that. And so we
yeah,
can
I,
come
and
in
I
touch
did,
then. Go ahead.
Yeah, I did, you know, writing became a good source of therapy for me as well. Once I was able to, you know, understand the full picture of my life and the abuse that I went through, I actually wrote my story, and it's called Seeds from Mama's Garden. And I wrote it as a fiction because I knew my family would sue me. I'm only close to a few people in my family. Because of the story as it was coming out. Oh, Catherine's making a, you know, a fuss and making a mess of things, you know. And I'm like, I'm not making a mess. This is what happened. And why are you guys acting like it didn't happen? So, yeah, so there was all of that going on. But my grandmother loved me. I never told her what was happening to me. So she died not knowing any of this. And I am really close to one of my younger brothers. He's like a son to me. And one of my nephews I'm really close to. And the others I'm rebuilding relationships with because there was so much negative conversation about me and what I'm about in the family that a lot of them didn't even know who I was. Several have not even been to my house, don't even know how I live. You know, just, yeah, it's just total, like, you know, it's, you know, like I'm in another part of Texas, and they're in the southern part of Texas, but, you know, I'm in Dallas, and they're, like, down in the Gulf area. And, you know, it's just like that. We don't really, you know, I mean, my brother and I talk all the time, you know, he's a great father. He's a great guy, and I basically raised him. And so we talk all the time. And then my nephew, which is the son of one of my sisters who now has passed, he calls me all the time, and he's a great kid. And the others, you know, they have, you know, it's like several of the girls it just repeated, you know, how my mom just was having – different children by different men, and just I'm just going, oh my God, you know. And in this day and age, how can anyone, you know, afford to have more than a couple kids? And it's like, this is crazy. This is asinine that you guys would just repeat these same patterns when you're demonizing me for trying to, you know, expose this and show you, look, there's a better way you can go. You know, you don't have to follow these patterns. But, you know, no, they demonized me. And, you know, I didn't have any kids by choice because I did not want to just, you know, be so overprotective that, you know, they would hate me. But, you know, I figured, you know, because I raised my younger brothers and sisters. My mom went back to work when I was in the ninth grade, so I basically raised my younger brothers and sisters. And I, you know, I did my time, I always say.
Yeah, you feel like you had your kids, all right?
Yeah, I got it.
I understand. And you know, it's so funny because what you said is so true. We, the survivors, with our own children, right, we either become overprotective, like you said, or there are some people, if they don't get help, and they can, and they're so filled with anger, they can mistreat their children. It doesn't even have to be in a sexual way. It can just be, you know, in any way, you know, just through behavior modification where they just, you know, themselves are so dysfunctional, they don't know how to treat the kids right. I remember with my daughter, now she was only 4 years old, okay, and I was living in a complex. I was in between husbands, okay? So, but anyway, the point is this. All of a sudden, she went missing. I was in, like, a condo-type thing, and I was upstairs, you know, cleaning. And I thought she was watching TV downstairs. Well, she walked out the front door, all right?
Oh, my goodness.
My God. Oh, the fear.
Yeah.
The fear that I felt. I had the whole complex out looking for her. Okay, And I didn't even think to call the police. I just had the complex out looking for her. And everybody was listening. They were doing great. You know, looking, we were scouring the woods. We were scouring the whole area. I mean, we were doing our job, okay? There was one little girl that she'd had a fight with a couple of weeks before. And the kid hit her with a brick. So, you know.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even, I know. Kids can do the stupidest things. And I thought to myself, well, I'm not even going to bother to look for, you know, Michelle there because they just had this terrible fight, blah, blah. Well, don't you know that's where she was?
Wow.
She was with the kid. And they were in the house and oblivious to what was going on outside. But I remember the fear factor because some of us, like, I was kidnapped when I was a kid, when I was 8 years old in New York. I was kidnapped there. And that always left behind a very heavy fear. I sleep, and I was laughing at you before because you said you had knives or something by your bed. I still have knives by my bed. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They're still there. Because I don't, I never learned to let that part go. I get to trust people. And, you know, there's a couple times when, one time I was being strangled by my first husband. I told you it was awful, but he was so drunk. I don't even know if he knew who I was. And we were in the kitchen. The kitchen can be a very dangerous place. And I reached behind the stove, or next to the stove, and I got a knife, and I thought, I have two children by you, you monster. You know, and I don't want them having to be with you. And luckily, I guess for him, his father had a camper outside. He came to visit, and that's where he was sleeping. Well, he heard the ruckus in the house, and he came in and pushed a knife out of my hand and broke the hold. So... I had, you know, like we all have our stories, all these terrible things that happen, but I could identify with you. This is what I was saying in the beginning of the show. Sometimes people can identify, you know, with the guest who comes on because I, too, have my weaponry, if you will, close at hand.
Yes.
That's just the way it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I get it. Yeah. I get it. So you've told us quite a bit so far here, you know, about your relationship. And I only had one other sibling, and he, too, was one of my abusers. And if he's still alive, you hearing what I'm saying? If he's still alive, he's down in Florida, and he can stay there, okay?
Yeah.
I don't want to see him ever again. And when I wrote my book, okay, Panic Child, because of the fear factor, because I was afraid of him as another monster, I didn't put names, you know, I changed names. This is what people do to stay safe.
Yeah.
You have to. You don't want to get sued, and you don't want to get killed either, you know what I'm saying? So, So, you know, we have to, you know, take safety measures even today. I don't want to give the wrong impression. I am not a frightened person. I'm just a careful person.
And a lot of times, you know, you can't fend off a violent man, so you have to have some kind of weapon. I'm not prone to violence, but you know, if it's me or them, you know, I'd rather it be them. You know, I've got a lot of life still left in me, and I want to go on and live. But, you know, I've been very fortunate that I have healed, and I'm still a work in progress. There's times when I go, wow, I didn't even realize that about myself. And I'll talk to my husband about it. I'm remarried. And I'll say, yeah, I noticed this about myself. Isn't this crazy? And I think it stems back from this. And you know, we'll talk about it because I want him to understand where I am and maybe some of my triggers or, you know, just why I behave certain ways. Because he says, you know, you get quiet around some people. And I said, because I feel an energy that's just not, it's not settling, you know, right with me. And so I use him as a buffer a lot of times when we're out in public, you know, if I'm sitting, you know, at the bar with some friends, I usually want to sit against the wall and he can sit next to me and buffer me from, you know, other people.
because there is a lot of still there's a lot of energy, you know, that I feel that, you know, it's just not, you know, positive energy. And so I just always tell them, I said, no, I was just kind of watching some things. I'm an observer. I observe things. So I'm still careful and cautious.
Well, we're hypervigilant, okay? Because when you go into, say, like a restaurant, I always look for the exit doors before I even sit down, all right? I mean, that's mm-hmm. something, you see, when we are kids and we've been put in terrible situations that children shouldn't be put in, it's a part of survival. And so you sit up against the wall, like you say, and so that your husband can buffer anything that might come your way. And I walk into a place and look for the exit door so I can run. if something comes after me or whatever, mm-hmm. I can look for the exit door, but I know where it is and out I go. I'm gone, It leaves behind, something. It's always something. Like with the knife issue, I have it close by. With the exit door, things like that. And that's from the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, it's okay, though. I'm not hurting anyone. If anything, I'm protecting myself. That's the way I look at it. So, we do have these things that you don't just quite get over. Will I ever change? I don't know. If that's what it takes, it makes me feel safe,
Yeah, and everybody heals at a different pace. So, what's right for me may not be right for you and for the next person. But, at least if you could take something from our conversation and apply it to your healing, you're just that, you're another step closer to feeling better and seeing life in a different perspective and seeing relationships in a different perspective, because all relationships are not abusive. You can find loving, caring people out there, but you got to get to that point where you love yourself and you know what love is and you have your expectations about what a relationship is, because you know what you can offer into a relationship. But you can set boundaries and say, okay, this is a deal breaker if you ever do this, or and then when people do things that you're not, that's not acceptable to you, you have to call them to the carpet and say, hey, I don't appreciate that. The other day I had not spoken to a girl that I know in like 10 years because she was so nasty to me. My husband and I had traveled to New York, and she lives in New Jersey, and so we left the city to meet with her to have dinner. And so the entire day I'm calling and saying, okay, are we still together? Are we still on? Everything's still good. And when I finally got her on the phone, she just blasted me like, I've got things to do. And, and I'm going, wait, what the hell just happened? So I just stopped. I was like, okay, if you're going to treat me like that and I'm trying to come and see you, then I don't have time for this. So I stopped communicating with her. But I think it was like 2 weeks ago I thought of her, or maybe a week ago I thought about her, and I went, you know what, I wonder what she's doing. So I Googled her and I got a phone number, and I was actually going to call her. Mm-hmm. And I got a call that evening. I don't know how she found out I had Googled her or whatever. I don't know what kind of traces they put on stuff with cookies or whatever. But she called me, and we were coming home from dinner. And my office line, I usually forward it to my cell phone when I'm going to be leaving early. And so I forwarded it, and so I knew the call was coming from my business line. And she, this is, I was trying to reach, Kathy. And I hate being called Kathy, but she called me Kathy at that time. And I was like, who is this? And she went ballistic and cussed at me and everything. You know who this is and all this kind of. And I went, so my husband hears this
My husband hears this, and he goes off on her because, first of all, she has a deep voice, so you couldn't tell if it was a male or a female. And so he takes the phone, and he's going back and forth with her, and then hangs up the phone. She calls back, and he hangs up again. And then she leaves a message saying, I just wanted to know if it was her, and I see that it is. But I'm like, you haven't talked to me in 10 years, and you behave that way? And I'm like, oh, my God. So that is a deal breaker. I will never speak to this woman again. You know, because how do you treat people like that?
Yeah.
You know, and
well,
I
she has
to.
Issues,
I mean, I know,
too.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. She has her own issues, and I bless her that she, hopefully she will find the help she needs. But, you know, that's not something I don't want in my world. I don't want it in my life. I call it clean house. I have clean house with a lot of people in my life. One girl, we were all going to birthday dinners together. It was four of us. But when my birthday came around, she basically just let me know that, nope, I'm not meeting with you. And so I was like, oh, but I give such good hugs. She's always, and I, for her birthday, I gave her, we're in the jewelry business, so I gave her some jewelry. And on Facebook, she posts, oh, yeah, you know, this is for my dear friend who gave me this for my birthday and tagged me in the post. And I was like, oh, my God, you know. And I just, you know, I can't allow people to treat me ways that I don't appreciate. And, you know, and if you, you know, enable people to treat you bad, they're going to continue to treat you bad.
That's right. That's exactly right. And if they're that type of personality, they look for it sometimes, you know, because they have a nasty
yeah.
streak. There's something that's wrong with them and their personality. And then they take it out on other people that they consider
mm-hmm.
Weaker, you know, whatever, mentally, whatever. And that's a nasty thing. See, that's toxic people. And,
yes.
and the toxic people in my life I've gotten rid of. And sometimes it's very painful, you know, because
yeah,
we can have
sure.
very strong feelings. And that's why you were in that position a few times, because you didn't, there's a part of you that didn't want to, you know, give up this relationship with her, and another part of it, you know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
Because you wanted it to work out. You wanted to enjoy this person, you know, and their company and all this other stuff. This is normal, see, whereas this other person just isn't where you're at. And sometimes people actually get a charge out of hurting other people. They do.
Yeah, I mean, and I just don't get this whole, you know, negative greeting thing with women these days. They're quick to, you know, be casual about calling each other, you know, the B word or, you know,
mm-hmm.
the W word. You know, it's like, I'm sorry, that's not me. I don't play like that. I don't, I, you know, respect me. I am not going to be your B or your
H-O.
You know, that's what they say these days. But, you know, I don't play like that. I, you know, I like positive people around me, loving people around me, respectful people around me. I don't play like that. And if that's the way you, yeah, go with your other girlfriends, do it, hang out, y'all have a good time. But that's
mm-hmm.
not me.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I have this friend. I'm still friendly with her for many years, actually. But when I first met her, I thought she had Tourette's syndrome. I really did, because every word out of her mouth was like F, 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 and other things.
Oh, wow.
I learned some new words, okay? Oh, my God, I won't even say it on air. It was that bad. And so I was looking at people around me that knew her better than I did, because I just met her. And someone pulled me aside and they said, oh, that's just the way she is. Don't take that seriously. She doesn't mean to be directing it towards you. But it still took me quite a while to think, can I see any goodness in this person? Where are they coming
yeah.
from?
Mm-hmm.
What makes them speak
mm-hmm.
that way? And then I realized, and she's been on the show, to tell her story years ago now, because I've been here 12 years, but I, you know, do I want to be her friend? Do I want her as my friend? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
then when I found out her background, I go, whoa, okay. Now I understand, not that she has to speak that way, but what I'd have to do with her is say, listen, I'm taking you someplace tonight, because she doesn't drive, she's on a lot of meds, and I want you to watch your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yes.
These people aren't going to accept this type of behavior. I said, I'm used to you. It took me a while to get used to you, okay?
Yeah.
But, you know, and I don't really like to hear all that. I mean, we all curse once in a while, but nothing big time, you know what I'm saying? But
I just call it colorful language, you know? Yeah, you know, and I'm not a prude or anything like that, but, yeah,
no,
there's a time
either.
And a place. There's a time and a place.
Right. Right. And you can even do it in jest with each other, you know, as long as it's not an everyday type of situation where this person is going to act out this type of behavior. It's embarrassing. I'd have to, you know, say, okay, now let's work a little bit on what you're going to talk about. And then she'd say, hey, don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to say. Well, she was brought up that way. See, I learned about her past. She couldn't speak her truth. A reality.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
So then it turned into cursing and all this other stuff. But still, you know, it's very hard to deal with people like that. And, you know, and we shouldn't have to if we can't handle it. You know, they have to learn respect. They have to learn boundaries.
Yeah.
They
mm-hmm.
have to learn boundaries. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My God. But this is what abuse does to people. You know, there's just so many different ways, you know, that abuse, you know, hurts people mentally, physically, emotionally, our spirit, everything, every way that a person can be hurt, you know.
Yeah.
And when, you know, a lot of people do have therapists and, you know, they work with them and they trust them and this is good. And a lot of times I get phone calls in the AM on the night owl. Okay, I'm still the night owl, all right? I'm watching for that sun to come up, all right? That's probably from the past, too. That's okay. I could always work. You know, I worked in detox centers, places like that. I didn't mind working shift work as long as I had the children taken care of, because that was always a problem. You know, they have to be taken care of, you know, when you work in shift work. But, you know, I would work jobs like this, and it didn't bother me to work the graveyard shift, as they called it, because as a child, I was always watching for the doorknob to turn. You see, that never left my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And when that doorknob turned, I knew that the monster, as I would call him, I still call him a monster. He's been dead for many years. He's still a monster, would come in.
Yeah.
You know. And I don't believe that these people, I honestly don't believe that they can be really, you know, rehabilitated. Even the first-time offenders, and this is something that I was speaking about the other night with someone who was working with the pedophiles / sex offenders. But the first-time offenders have offended so many times, you know, that and they're not sorry that they get caught, Kat. You know, I mean, many of them are 128 times they've offended. That doesn't mean 128 people. That means 10 times, or this one, 5 times, or that, whatever, which way you want to do the math. And I think that they should get the book thrown at them just as hard as second-time offenders and third-time offenders who are also assaultive, all right? That's the difference many times between the first and the third, because they do assault their victims. They might kill them, right?
Yeah.
So, but throw the book at them. Get them off the street, because I don't think rehabilitation, I don't think it works. Now, that's just my feeling. I could be wrong. I could be. You know, but...
I think that we have to also, you know, encourage the people, the victims, to use their legal rights and get these, you know, press charges, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know it's hard because the laws are not really for us. The laws are not for us, you know, and the burden of proof is on, you know, us to prove. You know, you can have a rape kid, you can have, you know, it's just your word against theirs, even though you can have bruising and evidence of that. You know, it's like they let so many, you know, like these college boys that they're just letting walk free
You know, it's like, you know, abuse is abuse. It's, you can't say, oh, he was just drunk. He, you know, boys will be boys. I don't buy that. I do not buy that.
I don't either. No. In colleges, they have, what is that, Chapter 9? I think it's Chapter 9. Because I used to go and do presentations in universities, and they brought up the Chapter 9 issue. And that's where you can go and get help on campus, where people will listen to you and listen to both sides, supposedly, okay?
Yeah, supposedly.
But it seems
like
so often, like what you just said, you know, well, the person was drunk. Well, what about the girl? Was she drunk too? Was she drinking too? That had, one has nothing to do with the other, okay? Whether
exactly.
she was having
it's kind of
like
with this.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when they ask,
yeah.
you know, what were you wearing? That has nothing to do with whether I can walk outside naked. But you have no right to touch me. It's not an
That's
advertisement
right.
for you to take what you want from me. That, you know, and I hate that because what are you saying? What was a child wearing when they were molested? You know, oh, did you get turned on by a diaper? You know, that's just craziness.
I know, it's
crazy when you think about the excuses that they, you know, and these attorneys should be ashamed of themselves who represent these people and say, oh, you know, they take advantage of the woman and re-victimize her by using her past as, you know, an example of, oh, was she, you know, basically she was asking for it. It's like that is just the lowest of arguments to have in a court case. And it should be ruled out. They shouldn't use that kind of stuff. That, you know, we're talking about, you know, if you can't bring up his previous crimes, don't bring up her past. She could have been promiscuous, but if she said no to this one, she said no.
That's right. That's right. And that's things, too, that, you know, were brought up on Chapter 9, that they were supposed to protect, you know, the person who was being abused. Hey, sometimes the men are being abused, okay, by other men. You know, like they'll go
mm-hmm.
into the men's room and be assaulted. And,
mm-hmm.
well, that should apply also to any cases like that, okay? But
yeah.
I do remember, yes, I do remember some years back, I believe it was in the UK, yeah, I think it was in the UK, they had this study, they did this test. They had this nice-looking lady, all right, walking down the
mm-hmm.
street absolutely naked, absolutely butt
mm-hmm.
naked, in plain English, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And,
uh-huh.
of course, so everybody's looking at it, go, whoa. Look, some people were just shocked. Some were turned off and, you know, all this other stuff. And then, of course, you have those going, ah, you know, like this. So
yeah.
But the question was, do you have a right to touch me even though I am naked? Do you have that right?
No.
And the answer to that is no.
Yeah.
You don't.
You can't. You don't have the right to touch me. You don't have. You can say what you want to me, but you have no right to touch me, to, you know, basically take what you want, to assault me, to, you know, do anything where you're physically touching me.
That's right.
And that
That's right.
Should override anything that, you know, these laws can be shaped and formed to, you know, to protect the, you know, the criminals.
Mhm. That's right. And there's so much of that. And then let's just get a little more real. You know, a lot of times people have more money than the other side, and judges
yeah.
get paid off, and prosecutors mm-hmm. get paid off, and all this other stuff. And see, there's so much wrong with the system.
Yeah.
It needs to be
mm-hmm.
torn apart and put together the right way, because so many times those of us who have been offended, you know, they walk. The other people walk because they have money
yeah.
and they can afford to pay off people. That happens in family court, and it also happens, you know, even in superior court if something's taken that high, you know, where things like that do happen, and that's a shame. Because that's not justice.
Yeah. No, it's
not. That's
not
justice.
It's not.
Mm-mm. No. So So let me go into your bio a little bit here, because I want to ask you something. Mm-hmm. It says here, Dr. Katz's focus includes working with individuals on healing from past trauma by re-educating on the difference between intimacy and sex as a way to break free of the pain that holds them back from developing loving, healthy relationships. What do you do? How do you teach the difference between intimacy and sex and love? How does that all come together?
Well, okay, so intimacy encompasses so much more. I wrote this book, ABCs of Intimacy, and intimacy is communication, respect, it's passion, it's affection. Because people confuse affection with attention. Just because someone is paying attention to you doesn't mean that they really love you. They could just be wanting to get laid. So it's like we know a lot of these things, and we tend to allow ourselves to fall into these relationships that is not giving us what we need or what we want in a relationship. So sex, I always say, it lasts about 7 minutes on average, okay? What are you doing with the rest of your time to really deeply connect with someone? Okay, so you have open communication. You set your boundaries. You let them know when you feel disrespected or you feel that they're not giving you affection. You know, a lot of guys get mad in couples therapy. Sometimes I get couples and the guy is, he's upset because he's like, well, she never wants to have sex. I say, well, are you affectionate? And he goes, well, yeah, I'll walk up to her and I'll kind of rub on her. And I'll say, but you only do it when you want sex. See, affection is a daily thing. If you're not touching each other on a daily basis, letting her know you appreciate her, letting him know you appreciate him, and you're touching each other without wanting sex, because then you're anchoring in the fact that, hey, this person really loves me. They like me being around, and it's not just when he can bend me over. It's kind of a thing where, hey, I really like spending time with you. Pass by and just give her a little squeeze while she's at the kitchen counter or she's doing something. Kiss her on her head. Bring him a glass of water while he's, on a call, a Zoom call. Just touch his shoulder. Just let him know. Being affectionate should be a daily occurrence. No drive-by kissing, none of that. I always say, take time, look in each other's eyes and really say, I love you. I appreciate you. I love this life that we're creating. You're collaborating on, we have the same goals for the relationship. You're trying to build something together. I don't like compromise, because compromise, it seems like somebody loses. But when you collaborate, you have a mutual goal, mutual goals in a relationship. And you're working to that. Yeah, you kind of massage here and there to kind of manipulate towards the goal. But it's your goal. So, yeah, a lot of times we don't get what we want in life, but if it's your goal, you're like going, oh, well, I need to move a little bit over here in order to get this goal, achieve this goal. So I always tell people, you got to look at intimacy as the whole picture. I have this wheel, this intimacy wheel with all of these different components, and in the center of it is love. Yes, sex is part of it. Passion is part of it. But intimacy is all of the goodies. It's all of the ingredients in that that foundation of love that you're talking about. It's going to make your house of love stand strong.
That's good. And then also too, I think the coming together as a couple, during intimacy, it's just so much fuller. You already have that loving, that bond, so many people have a hard time, even incorporating into a relationship. I've seen it too often myself, and it's lack of trust and whatever it is, it's just a hard thing. So it's not something, it's something that a lot of us have to work at, I remember the day, for God's sake, when some years ago, if someone came over to touch me, I'd jump. You know what I'm saying? Because because those of us who were beaten, say, and I certainly had my fill of that too, you know, it's like an automatic response. If someone comes over to hug you or, you know, to show affection, then you have to work on that first. Oh, my God. There's so many things that we have to work through and, you know, and to accept and say, hey, I am a person who deserves to be loved. I am a person who deserves to feel good, to feel safe. We have to learn how to feel safe so often. Yeah. Absolutely.
I remember I was the same way. I didn't want people touching me. I didn't want people looking at me. And it's hard because I'm 6'2", so anywhere I go, people are going to be looking at me because they're like, oh, my God, she's so tall. So getting used to being looked at and not feel that they're looking at me for the wrong reasons was something that I had to deal with. And but you were saying, you know, not being wanting to be hugged. I remember a lady that I was working with here in Dallas, and this was way before I even got therapy. And so I was working with her, and she was just like a big mama kind of feel. You know, she was a solid woman and big bosom, and she just always had a big old smile on her face. And every time I'd come to work, she'd call, Katrina, and she would give me this big old mama hug, you know. And her name was Gracie Mason, and I will never forget her because she was the one that helped me to get over that fear of being hugged or being touched. I was able to break free because of her expression of love and care that she gave to me. And she was going through, her husband was dying of cancer during that time. And there was times when I'd see her, you know, she looked like she was far away, and I was like, Gracie, what are you thinking about? And she was like, oh, I was just thinking of me and Vern, and we were going, you know, when we went to somewhere, you know, and she would tell me some stories about her and him. But you know, here's a woman who's already in, you know, in a situation in her own life, but she was able to give love to me. And so she helped me to be able to be hugged again.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, what a nice story. Yeah. And it's what you so needed, you know. It took me quite a while before I would allow for, you know, a guy to, you know, to hug me and to hold me and without stiffening at first. Oh, being on guard, I suppose, is what it is. You know, like being on guard because I'd been hit so much, so many times. And, you know, just to be hugged and held and accepted and all these other things. And then you learn from that to accept yourself, you know. Hey, I'm not a bad person. Hey, I am lovable. I am able to give love back. All these things that we have to go through as survivors to, you know, to be normal, to get to be as normal as you're going to be, you know. And I still have some quirks about me, but I feel, hey, after all the things I've been through, we all have our stories, you know, that's okay. You know, it's all right to have a few things, you know, because we're pretty much all right. And this is why our viewers and our you know, we have Zoom meetings and all this other stuff on NASCA, but also, too, the listeners, what they have to understand is that we are people of worth. Okay, and we are lovable, you know, and we can give love when we're ready, but it doesn't happen overnight. That's why we call it the healing journey, you know, because it is a journey. It's a journey from, you know, what we came from to what we are today. And everybody has a different journey, you know. It can be a long journey. It can be a short journey. Some heal faster than others, you know, and so forth. Now, you sound wonderful. Okay, you sound
thank you.
You know, you absolutely do. You had a lifetime. I mean, for God's sake, you were sitting up in the tree to get away from people. I don't blame you.
Yeah,
you know, and I get it. You know, and you know, there's just so many things that again, we can always, you know, go along and say, well, I can identify with this. I can identify with the feelings that are behind what made you sit up in that tree. you know, and I wish I'd had trees to sit up at in times. I was in New York and all this other stuff. I have trees, you know. It wasn't 42nd Street where they had the one tree, you know what I'm saying, at one time, that movie.
Yeah.
But, with me, it was more of a building. Oh, there's an empty building. I'll go over there and go in there, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so we come from different backgrounds, but we also come from the same feelings. You know, our feelings mm-hmm. are the same. You know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And many times our stories have so many similarities to them. I applaud you, you know, for where you've been and where you've become and who you are, because from coming from a childhood where you were protecting so many, you know, your children, they were like your children, your siblings were like your children, and watching a mother who went from husband to husband to husband to husband to husband, as you said, you know, that couldn't have been easy. That didn't give stability to the household. And so often we women, I mean, I was in between husbands, and I get dating at times off and on. And you have to be careful who to even choose to date. And a lot of times I had one guy that I had gone to school with, for God's sake. I felt I really knew him. I'd gone mm-hmm. to high school with him. And so he turned on my son and was doing inappropriate things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, yeah. and my son didn't tell me. Oh, no. He didn't tell me for years, and that hurt me because I adore my children. I always have, and I thought we were closer. I thought we were closer, where they would, yeah. you know, feel free to come to me and say, hey, Ma, this is what happened, and all this other stuff. Well, I said there's something wrong with him in another sense, and I got rid of him, again, a toxic person. And then years later, all of a sudden, my son tells me, well, he was inappropriate, and I had no idea. So we
yeah.
hide many times what happens to us, even from someone
yeah.
that we, you know, could feel free to go to. Oh, jeez.
I think, you know, those predators, they look for opportunities to victimize kids
uh-huh.
and to manipulate them to where they won't say anything, because, you know, if this is a young man and he is being, you know, inappropriately touched by another man, it's like, okay, then is he saying, threatening that he's going to, you know, say he's a gay man, and then maybe he's struggling with the, you know, the fact that he was touching him, and maybe he did, you know, feel a sensation, and so that, you know, that's confusing. So
yep.
You know, it's yeah, I think these predators, they just look for anything to kind of confuse the person and make them, you know, less tempted to, you know, just immediately say, no, don't touch me, get away from me, I'm going to tell my parents, I'm going to tell my mom, you know. And, mm-hmm. you know, they look for the weaker person.
Right. Yes, absolutely. You're exactly right. I'm looking at your bio again because, you know, the show, we had such a good conversation. We really did. This was a very good interview. And I hope
Thank
everyone
you.
Enjoyed it, because I certainly enjoyed it. You're so easy to talk to. But it says here, she is a show host and former co-host of a syndicated morning radio show with ABC Radio Networks, Inc. Do you have your own show? What is your show? Tell us.
Well, I no longer do that show. With ABC Radio, I was co-host for the morning drive time show. And I stopped doing that in 2005. Or was it 2003? I think it was 2003. And then I was doing an online show, and was called Resilient Living. Because I think, you know, survivors have to be resilient. You have to be able to
yes.
just bounce back from all of the challenges that life can throw at you. And so I was doing that. And so now I'm going to be writing a new book and just kind of revamping my whole but everything is on drkatsmith.com.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. That's good. All right, that's on drkatsmith.com. Is that what you just said?
drkatsmith.com.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. And I want people to hear that so they can, you know, learn about that. When do you think your book will be out?
I'm trying to write a chapter a week. So, and then I want to do about 10 chapters, and it's all about, it's one of the quotes that I use with my speaking. And I said, when life is not working out, start within. So that's the title of the book. And so it's about resilience, it's about recovery. It's about, you know, just taking control of your life and recalibrating for your future.
Right. That's something that a lot of us need guidance, you know, how to look forward, you know, and goal planning, but not making goals too high, you know, so you crash and so forth and so on. And that's really very interesting. And I had to learn that too, which I put a little bit of that in my book, Panic Child. And they made it all the way to Japan, so I guess somebody liked it. I don't know.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool seeing that. But, you know, with the – I just want to – are you self-publishing or do you have a publisher, I hope?
With this book, I want to do traditional publishing, but my other books have been self-published.
And the reason why I say that, and I don't mind saying it, okay, I started out with Book Surge, which worked very well, but they had more, you know, people writing about butterflies, their doggies, and pussycats, and all this other thing, you know what I'm saying, vacations.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I had to stand up and say what my book was about, oh, boy, because
yeah,
I was new.
Yeah, heavy topic. Yeah.
Oh, Lord, let me tell you something. You could hear a pin drop, and no one spoke to me either. Okay, afterwards. They didn't want to talk about that. Oh, no. But but Book Surge wanted to make a, what do you call it, like a movie, you know, a trailer first of my book.
Uh-huh.
Now, this was way back in 2008 when I first started writing. And when their legal department saw what it was about, they dropped me.
Oh, wow.
So I can honestly, and then Author House picked me up. I can honestly say from 2008, say, to our date today, people are talking about child abuse. I mean, I'm sure you've seen so much of a difference on Amazon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because on Amazon, when my first book went on, there was only one other memoir there. That was it. Now you look at it, and people are talking, and this is so good. This is so good, because not only are we getting the word out, okay, but we're educating people, and we're helping people because they can read our book, they can learn from us, and say, hey, you know, this happened to me, and that's why we have this program right here, you know, so people like yourself and many other people come on. I mean, this is scan number, let's see, let me scroll down. It's 2910, 2,910 shows we've done. So we have this platform where people can come on and tell their stories. And you were a wonderful guest. And the fact that you went from what you went through to become what you are today gives a lot of people hope. Absolutely.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. Thank you.
Oh, no, absolutely. And we've got about, maybe 4 or 5 minutes left, I guess. What would you say to people to give them hope who are struggling? They know that they've been abused. They don't know where they're floundering. Oh, my God, you've got 90 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, I would say that it's not too late to start somewhere. If you take anything from anything that we've shared today, know that you can do it. I can just continue and tell you experience after experience, but I was able to take control of my life and say, you know what, I deserve better, I want better, and I don't like the way I've been feeling, so I want to change the narrative.
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And that's exactly, you know, what we need to hear. You know, so please don't be a stranger. You've got the telephone number here. Some night we feel like being a part of the panel. Okay, we didn't have a panel tonight. It's Friday. That's another thing, too. But on Mondays and Wednesdays, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we have people come on. So, and then on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have those who are professional like yourself too, you know, come on and people can call in and ask you questions, maybe about relationships or whatever. And
okay.
So feel, yeah. So, you know, feel free to call in anytime you want. Okay, Monday to Friday.
Awesome.
Okay.
Okay.
You're a
all
NASCA
right.
family
do.
Member now. We don't want to get rid of you.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay. All right.
You.
Well, listen, this is a wonderful show, and I have to end it now or we'll get cut off. Okay? So good night.
Okay.
God bless. And take care of yourself.
Thank you so
all right?
much. Thank you so
okay.
much.
Okay.
You too.
You're welcome so much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Blog Talk Radio.